Welcome to the Arts and Antique Radio Show, where your host, nationally recognized certified appraiser Elizabeth Stewart, Santa Barbara's treasure sleuth, will help you put a value on the treasures in your own home.
Every time it rains, pennies from heaven. Don't you know each cloud contains pennies from heaven?
So let's find out. How valuable is it?
Hello, 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 Santa Barbara. It's your Chantress of Everything Valuable and Beautiful, Elizabeth Stewart. And I have the pleasure of speaking with Ted. Pronounce your last name for me.
Roche.
Ted Roche and Greg Gorga. And we're going to talk today about the Santa Barbara Deep Water Diving Monument, a gift of public art to the city and harbor, which honors the community of Santa Barbara as the birthplace of deep water diving technology. And I want to, this has been so fascinating for me because, you know, first of all, it's a beautiful work of art, but the other thing is how it came together, why it came together. And I want to talk a little bit about the committee and, you know, the process itself. I discovered, Greg, that you've got a wonderful blog that talks about the making of the work of art. And that was fascinating for me because, you know, I know the lost wax process intimately, and I've known artists that, you know, from soup to nuts have done this, and the blog explains it so beautifully. So anyway, let me just first introduce both gentlemen, and then we're going to talk about why Santa Barbara is important in this regard. So Greg, first listen to Mr. Roche. He's got 40 years of experience in maritime construction and commercial diving. He's the founder and former CEO of Aqueous Corporation, formerly DiveCon Services, a premier subsea contractor established here in Santa Barbara. Aqueous specializes in commercial diving, ROV, vessel contracting service, primarily supporting the oil and gas sector across the West Coast, Gulf of Mexico, and international markets. Mr. Roche leads the company as CEO, or are you still with the company?
Yes, I'm a senior advisor. So I sold the company in 22 and was CEO for the last 2 years. And then in July of last year, I stepped down and now I'm a senior advisor and board member. So,
okay. And then you've got offices in Santa Barbara and Ventura, California, Houston, and Lafayette, Louisiana. Yeah. So you've got a degree in marine diving technology, and you are chairman of the advisory board for marine diving technology program at our city college.
Right. I'm a proud graduate of a marine diving technology program way back in 1975. So I've been doing this a long time. And you know, this monument is super important to Santa Barbara and super important to me. I was raised in Santa Barbara, multiple generations, an avid surfer, and have worked all over the world, but have luckily been able always to come back to Santa Barbara, and super proud of our history here. I was employed by many different commercial diving companies here in town before I started my own company. So I'm really proud of where we've come as an industry in regards to a leader in diving safety. But most importantly, what this statue does is it embraces the guys before us, the pioneers of our industry. And what's very unique about Santa Barbara, as you alluded to, Elizabeth, was that in the 60s, when offshore oil was found out here, they had to go deeper than normal. And so the guys they went to were the commercial abalone divers. And so they were the real pioneers. And by the way, I started diving as a commercial abalone diver in the 70s. However, the technology wasn't there. So you had very unique individuals. And Dan Wilson was one who made a 400-foot gas dive. And what I mean by gas is as you know, nitrogen is toxic at depth, right? So air is 79% nitrogen. So you displace nitrogen with helium, which is an inert gas, and then you maintain the same partial pressure of oxygen. So these guys were real pioneers in this. And to make a 400-foot surface dive in 1962, Dan Wilson, who went on to form Subsea International, who was my first employer, made this remarkable dive off Santa Cruz Island. And along with himself and guys like Laddie Handelman and Bev Morgan and Bob Kirby, who manufactured dive helmets and just very innovative, and you know, formed they called Santa Barbara the Helium Gold Rush, right? So these were the first divers, and a lot of the commercial diving came from Santa Barbara. For instance, Cal Dive, which is now no longer, they were formed here. They were a huge publicly traded corporation. Oceaneering is still a very large publicly traded corporation. I go back to Woody Treen, Treen's Diving. I worked for Woody back in the day. Martech, worked for Martech. Ocean Systems was here. So Santa Barbara's got a lot of history. So I'm so proud to be a part of this, where every day when I go to the harbor, and my son's a commercial fisherman here in the harbor, I have a boat in the harbor as well. I get to walk by that statue, and that Superlight 17 that's on the is I owned and still own a Superlight 17. Again, it's just very unique. A lot of people don't understand that about Santa Barbara. And, you know, we're really proud of our harbor. It's a working harbor. So we have right now, we have commercial divers harvesting sea urchin. You know, abalone has been shut down for quite a while. And so it's a great, great tribute. And I really want to acknowledge Don Barthelmess and Les Leaney and these guys. They had a vision, and it's now a reality. And I got involved as a benefactor because I wanted to be a part of this. And I'm so thankful that it's all coming to fruition. So tomorrow's going to be a great day. And so every day you get to walk by Santa Barbara and there's this cool statue. And, you know, so super excited.
So I just want to shout out. So if you're listening, today is Friday, Saturday, April 5th at 4:30, 107 Harbor Way by the Santa Barbara Maritime Museum. You can go by the sculpture now and it's veiled, but there'll be an unveiling and it'll be the great reveal tomorrow at 4:30. And I can't wait to see it in person. First of all, I got a couple of questions. Greg is here. Well, let me introduce Greg, executive director. He joined us, the Santa Barbara Maritime Museum in 2007 as director of development. And he's been executive director since May of 2008. He has a BA in English from Rutgers, my mother's alma mater. He's the past president of the Council of American Maritime Museum, chair of the City of Santa Barbara Community Development and Human Service Committee, formerly. Obviously, many, many board member credits to his name. And Greg's going to talk a little bit about, you know, how this came to be as well. But I got a couple of questions for Ted. So 2022 marked the 60th anniversary of the 400-foot pioneering mixed gas dive by Hugh, quote, Dan Wilson. He was a former abalone diver. And that led to the deep water diving revolution. And I went back and sourced some of the photos of him getting suited up. I want to know, because, you know, what I found out in Ted's bio was that he began life as an abalone diver, commercial diver, and then superintendent. He has hands-on experience in some of the world's most challenging offshore environments all over the world. North Sea, I can't even imagine. I sailed on the North Sea. I can't even imagine North Sea diving. South China Sea, Alaska, the U.S. West Coast, and the Bay in Campeche in Mexico. So with the idea that 60 years ago in 2020, Dan Wilson went down 400 feet with this mixed gas airflow, I want to know, Ted, how risky was that?
It was super risky in the sense that, I mean, we do deep water diving right now. I mean, Aqueous is a saturation diving company where we have guys that live under pressure But we go down to that depth routinely, but it's out of a diving bell. And so Dan did this. It's a surface dive, which is totally different. So we do surface diving now where you dive and then you come up and you take water stops on your way up and then you get into a surface recompression chamber. So you've got to remember back in 62, they didn't have the technology that we have now. In fact, they modified a heavy gear helmet, and there was all kinds of instances that, I mean, you would never do that now. I mean, you know, I'm really proud of where we've come just in my career. You know, there was a lot of guys killed in the North Sea when I was there. I mean, forgive you, you know, from there was 33 divers killed, some from Santa Barbara, in between 1977 and 1979, which is crazy, wow. You know, and that was in the UK sector alone. But to answer your question, Elizabeth, yeah, it was super dangerous. And these guys pressed it to, you know, and you know, you get back and I look back at what we used to do and you just kind of did it, right? And it was, and so it's all relative. But now, you know, it's not a bunch of cowboys out there diving now. We mitigate our risks. We have a lot of safety processes. I'm really proud of the fact in my 25 years of my own company, I've never had any fatalities or serious injuries. So really proud of where we've come to mitigate all those risks, but it was absolutely a very dangerous deal.
And I was reading that Wilson's support crew was a bunch of abalone divers and Brooks Institute photography students. I mean, it just sounds like let's try it and let's risk somebody's life trying this. I mean, okay. Another question for Ted, I was up last night trying to think, wrap my head around this. I have a diving certificate that I worked for it in a Honduras dive school. And, you know, you go down and then you check, you go down and you check, you go down and you check. And I'm wanting to know, with this mixture, oxyhelium mixed gas, it's called Heliox. And I understand it's non-narcotic at depth.
Yeah. So
explain that to me.
Well, the whole point is nitrogen, which is in air, right, becomes toxic at depth. You've heard of nitrogen narcosis or rapture zone.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you can't function. Like if you make a deep air dive, meaning like over 150 feet, your brain is like you just had you've got a buzz, like you just powered a couple of drinks. And so your mind is not sharp. And then beyond that, it's actually toxic and you can't survive with nitrogen. So helium is an inert gas. And so they use it as a filler gas. Obviously, the downside of helium is that you have the Donald Duck voice. And it also is takes your body heat off seven times greater than in an air environment. But so We routinely dive Heliox in a saturation environment where you live under pressure in a chamber on the deck of the ship and the diving bell locks on, but you stay at depth. So you don't decompress after every dive. So we routinely do a 30-day saturation run, and then it's about a 7-day decompression. So the difference is in why Heliox is that it displaces the nitrogen and you can have multiple dives when you're fully saturated and not decompress until the end of the, it doesn't matter once you're saturated, if you stay another hour or another month, your decompression commitment is still the same. But for instance, if you're making a 500-foot dive saturation, you'd be stored at a depth of about 420 feet. And when you decide to decompress, it's about a 7-day decompression because it's a very slow ascent rate. So, you know.
Okay. So when you say 7 days, are you coming up 7 days? Are you up and then you're decompressing?
The chamber is pressurized on the deck of the ship, but you're ascending inside you're elevating your pressure. So like it's a half a PSI per foot of seawater, right? So at 500 feet, you're pressurized at 250 PSI. And so, but the ascent rate is 6 feet an hour to 100 feet, 5 feet an hour, to 50 feet, 4 feet an hour, and on. And so when you take all that slow ascent rate, and that's just so you don't get a bubble and the bubble gets hot in your gas system. So to eliminate the bends.
To talk about that, the dangers in those early days, those guys didn't know all that with helium, right? They didn't know the decompression rate. They didn't even know the
that's even worse, Greg.
Helium to oxygen, like all that they had to learn on the run as they're making these dives, right? So that's why those early days, and that's why we're honoring these pioneers. It was dangerous. You're right. It was very, very dangerous.
So, okay, so the seven, just to go back to Ted, the 7-day decompression is in the decompression chamber in, on the ship.
That's correct. And these okay. are large decompression. You can stand up in them. They have bunks. They have a toilet facility, a shower facility, and you get food in and out. You have a medical lock where it's a tube inside that's got a hatch on the inside, a hatch on the outside. So you can put your food in, close it, pressurize it, get your food out. And technology has... our guys now, they have iPads in there. They have Wi-Fi in there, you know. And so it's come a long ways. But to Greg's point, I mean, these guys were winging it. And you know, the tables have changed, the decompression tables, I'm meaning. And the bends incident rate now is extremely low. Like, for instance, I've been bent 3 times, but they were in early tables. And we don't do those anymore. So, but those guys were way early.
Okay, so you've had the bends 3 times.
Yeah, I'm fine.
So what you didn't see, because this is radio, is that Ted just gave a monster's twitch. So that's it. So, okay, so what does the bends feel like?
Well, there's different types. Mine was a pain-only bend. And it's like you've got needles in your joint. And it's basically a nitrogen bubble that it's just very acute pain, and it can hit your elbow, your knee. And then there's more serious types, which hit your central nervous system. And so what you have to do is you have to recompress, and you go on oxygen, and you slowly get the bubble out of your system. And but again, I don't want to sensationalize this. It's a rare occurrence now, very rare occurrence for a commercial diving company like ourselves to ever bend, have a bend incident. So again, we've just come a long ways, and it's not a bunch of cowboys. It's very well planned, and risks are mitigated. You don't just jump over the side, but it's
yeah. I get it. But what I learned in researching for this that it some of the world's largest. This is unbelievable. The world's largest publicly traded dive company, Oceaneering International, had its corporate headquarters on Coda Street in Santa Barbara in the 1970s. And then Cal Dive and Oceaneering are still trading today on the New York Stock Exchange. So I got a question for Greg. So Greg, you know, Purisima. Purisima is the dive bell, the first commercial lockout bell, and that happened in 1964. And I read that its initial use revealed several flaws.
Yes, so that's another Dan Wilson invention. So we have that helmet that Ted was talking about. There's an old Japanese abalone helmet that Dan used to do that 400-foot dive in the museum. And that Prisma bell is outside the museum on our patio where Dark Coffee is. And the two issues with that, there's a few. So Dan didn't know anything about center of gravity. So when it was first launched off the city pier right in front of the museum, it was two bells and it fell over on its side. So they had to have a third bell to stabilize it in the water, but that made it very difficult to get on and off the boats they were using. And then they made the portholes too small, like you would, I guess, in a submarine, but they're still wearing those big helmets, the big suits. And so they had trouble getting in and out of it. So that led them to work with a guy named Bev Morgan to develop smaller masks and lighter weight diving gear. So we say that bell, the Prisma, which he thought about this bell, he learned at Prisma Point. That's where the idea came to him. While not a commercial success, it did lead to all the other bells that came after it. And it led to the evolution of lighter weight diving gear. And then Bev Morgan started working with Bob Kirby to start creating these helium oxygen helmets that Ted was talking about. Bev knew a lot about Oh my gosh. What do they make the helmets out of now? It's fiberglass. Because he was a surfboarder, a shaper too. So he used fiberglass for surfboards. So he started making the helmets with that. And that company, Kirby Morgan, started, I think, in 66 officially. So they're celebrating their 60th anniversary next year. They're still in existence, still out of Santa Barbara County. And they provide about two-thirds, three-quarters of the world's commercial diving helmets.
I just wanted to give a shout out because I want to mention the folks on the committee. So the Deepwater Diving Committee was formed by local historian, founder of the Historical Diving Society, Leslie Leaney, and Professor Emeritus Don Barthelmess. And how this came to happen is an amazing story. Don and Leslie contracted with two directors of the Monument Project, British guys who crafted the UK sculpture for military, honoring military divers. And the committee was Greg and Ted Roche, Carol Coleman, who was Volunteer of the Year in 2016, and Mike Morgan, who still runs the company, Kirby Morgan, making those unique diving helmets, which, by the way, are the international standard for military and deep water divers worldwide, out of Santa Barbara here. Mike Morgan of Kirby Morgan Dive System, Phil Newsom, who is very active with diving industry safety. And so there was the board. And just a little bit about supporting this. If you go and you see the unveiling Saturday, April 5th at 4:30, and you fall in love with that sculpture, you can buy a maquette, a small version of it, a 20-inch version of that sculpture. And so you know, Ted, I'm an appraiser, so this was super interesting to me because the artist has limited the edition to 300, which is a very, very small edition. What that means in my language is that the potential for increase in value over time is great because rarity factor is there. There's only 300. Now, you can buy this. It's 20-inch sculpture, and it comes with a certificate and a coin of authenticity for $5,500. And if you're interested, you can order both projects. So you can order the Military Divers Memorial and the Deepwater Diving Monument for a discounted price together of $10,500. They're about 40 pounds, 21-inch high. And it could contrast that to the real monument, which
I
is
have
8 feet
of them right behind me. If you can see those guys back there.
Oh, right. There they are. Yeah.
I was going to ask you.
Oh, I was going to ask you if you had yours yet. Okay. The real monument is 8 foot tall. And, Ted, I want to talk for another 10 minutes. Is that okay? I know you have to leave way before.
No, that's 10 good.
Minutes. Great. It's okay. Okay, because this is so interesting. And, you know, we got you as an expert here. Talk us through this. So just another shout out about how unique this is to Santa Barbara and why this sculpture is so important. Since 1964, 90% or over of deep water diving helmets are made in Santa Barbara, right here. And in 1968, as early as that, Santa Barbara City College developed the only community college program in the United States to train marine technicians and divers. And they still support the wonderful global industry. Okay, so we'll go to quick break. When we get back from the break, I want to talk a little bit about the process and the artist, Greg Pultanovich, and how this came to be, how this miracle came to happen. Okay, Rich, let's go to quick break. So if you're listening and it's Friday, Saturday, April 5th at 4:30 at the Harbor, you can see the unveiling. Don't turn that down. Back in a minute.
My wicked, wicked ways and those wicked, wicked days when the blood and the gold poured down just like the rain. That wicked, wicked sea and my most wicked company when they screamed for my head in England, France, and Spain. When they screamed for my head in England, France, and Spain. When they screamed for my head in England, France, and Spain.
Oh, Santiana, again that day.
Away, Santiana.
Now pull the yarn up the west they say.
Along the plains of Mexico, well, heave her up and away we'll go. Away, Santiago.
Welcome back. It's Elizabeth Stewart, and we're talking today about this wonderful, I don't know, it's almost a little bit of a miracle, the Santa Barbara Deepwater Diving Monument, which is about to be unveiled, honoring Santa Barbara as the birthplace of deepwater diving technology. And not only that, honoring, since the 60s, the people who have made Santa Barbara world famous for diving, deepwater diving. And I wanted to ask a little bit about Dan Bartholomew, because he was going to be on the show today. Couldn't make it, but I did look at his background. Emeritus professor of the highly acclaimed Marine Diving Technology Program, trained divers and marine technicians for 30 years, director of the program for 10 years. Under his leadership, the program was awarded the Exemplary Program Award from the California Community College Chancellor's Office. Award winner for sports and education from the Academy of Underwater Arts and Sciences. He was awarded a highest honor, Faculty Lecturer of the Years, by his peers and students. And he's past president of the Historical Diving Society in Santa Barbara Maritime Museum. He had started this effort to form the monument in 2011. So it's been a project that's been going on now for 10 plus years. He was spearheading the efforts to fundraise, restore, and return the world's first commercial lockout diving bell to Purisima, back to our harbor, where it was built in 1964. Greg, can you tell us a little bit about his diving monument efforts?
Sure, yeah, and Don was instrumental in getting the Purisima diving bell here. So I was actually at a DEMA conference in Las Vegas, which is a more of a sport diving bit. It's a giant conference. And Leslie Leaney, who started the Historical Diving Society in the United States, one of our original board members here at the Maritime Museum, and Don Bartholomew were both there, and Don, past president here and at City College with the diving program. And so we had a meeting. Mike Morgan was there, and he brought these two British gents with their British accents to us. And Leslie's Brit too, so they got along well. And they had just built actually a third monument. They opened up in Florida honoring Navy divers in Florida. And so they had the idea of building one here in Santa Barbara to honor Santa Barbara as the birthplace of deep water commercial diving. And the original concept was to fund that by selling those 300 statuettes, those 20-inch statues that you talked about earlier. And we did sell, so that they led that effort. The committee was formed, but you know, it would have taken a lot longer to get the funding for it, selling statuettes. We sold quite a bit, but we needed to sell 300. And then Ted stepped up and made the initial contribution to get this moving faster. And it would not have happened without Ted as well. And so they came to me here at the Maritime Museum, because they're both past board members, and asked us to be the fiscal agent for donations to that monument project. So we started taking donations for it. It was a $500,000 campaign to get that funding. Don really made a lot of those asks and really reached out into the community. And we had support from all over the country, both in the selling of the statuettes, which went towards this monument, and those donations. And so really would not have happened without Don and Leslie, but also without Ted. And you mentioned Mike Morgan, part of the group. And even Phil Newsom is a Santa Barbara guy as well. So it all was a real local effort. And the sculptor, Greg, I can't even pronounce his last name, but he's out of L.A. He did the monument of Ronald Reagan at the Reagan Library. He's done a lot of great pieces. And it was a process. It was, you know, it took a couple of years to make this monument, but it is a thing of beauty. So we are very excited to have that here in the harbor. And it also is kind of an anchor, like a bookend, to match the dolphin sculpture at Stearns Wharf. So now the harbor and the Stearns Wharf have more of a connection. You can go from one to the other. And it's really wonderful to honor the individuals who put Santa Barbara on the map as the birthplace of deep water commercial diving.
Okay, so a question for Ted. So I was looking at the process of the manufacturing of the sculpture, and you know when so I've worked with artists for 30 plus years in my job, and so I always wonder, you know, the decisions around the creative process. You know, what was the artist Greg Pulatanovich? What was he going for? And it turns out that one of the things that I read that the detail and the historical accuracy were foremost. And, you know, it could be that the creative process was going to involve, you know, the artist's own interpretation. But in this case, no, it was the primary, I guess you call determinant, would be the detail and the historical accuracy. And then I understand that the research involved photos and records from Santa Barbara City College, Marine Technology Project, and the Historical Diving Society of USA, their archives. And the molds were exquisitely cast to be incredibly accurate. And I wonder if Ted can speak to that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you wouldn't want a statue that wasn't, you know, exactly. And I can tell you, I own that same helmet, the bailout bottle on his back, his harness, his weight belt, all that, and the suit. It's exactly as we would do it. He has a knife down by his calf that's not normally done for the commercial divers. That's the only thing, but it's a beautiful, very deep. I can't wait to, I purposely have not gone down there and to the harbor. So I'm looking forward to tomorrow. I've gotten some previews, but it's going to be extremely detailed. Elizabeth, you're spot on. You wouldn't want some, you know, monument that wasn't accurate, because then all the guys walking by would say, well, that's not right, but it is right. And so it's going to be very well received, but and it was all because of the forethought to make sure it was right, you know. So
I want to just mention that this is not just something that comes out of somebody's studio ready made. So to do a sculpture like this, I understand it took at least 27 different parts. And we can talk about the mold process. It's the lost wax process, but it's sort of like reverse negative, goes back and forth until basically you've got something that is the wax image, which it is actually makes another mold. It's an involved process. We don't have time to talk about it, but the idea is that these pieces that Ted's talking about that are historically accurate, each of those pieces fit together for historical accuracy. And this is not an easy thing to conceive of at all. And John actually has a question here.
Hello, I've been listening to the show and found it very interesting. And one of the things I wondered was, who figured out that helium was better than nitrogen? Like, how did that come about? I got to imagine there was a lot of trouble up until that point if people were trying to dive deep with nitrogen and being drunk. But how did they discover helium worked better?
It's an inert gas, right? So it doesn't add anything. And to be honest with you, I don't know. Guy's smarter than me. I mean, so, you know.
Well, I think the U.S. Navy was using it before Dan Wilson did his dive. Yeah. So somewhere based
on U.S. Navy, but we've really surpassed the Navy. But the heliox, we had tables initially that were heliox tables. And again, the whole point is to displace nitrox, displace nitrogen, excuse me.
John was interested because he's a physics guy. So he wanted to know from this.
And a chemistry minor.
He wanted to know from that standpoint. You know, I just want to give one other shout out, which is that if you are interested in seeing what these beautiful little, they're called maquettes because they're the smaller version of the bigger sculpture. And they're 21 inches high. And it's a limited edition of 300. And basically, I kind of was like, Greg, I really didn't understand, you know, the pricing structure here, because it's to me, they're cheap for bronze, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, we want people to have them. And we actually had to raise it during the, you know, started at 5,000, but, you know, prices of everything is going up. But I do want to point out Tony and Paul, the British gentleman from Monuments Project, worked with Greg, the sculptor, all along the way. This is they have three different statues that they've worked with him. And I also want to give a shout out to Mike Wiltshire in the Waterfront Department, the City of Santa Barbara. He was great to work with and picked out the spot for this because it is a gift to the city. And it does honor the Santa Barbara Harbor and all the people that were a part of this harbor back in the day. So it was really a great team effort from everybody involved, and especially all the people who bought statuettes and donated to the project.
And, the interesting thing is the situation that where the sculpture is placed is so advantageous. And I see how you've done like a hexagonal kind of mounting with beautiful lighting. So it's going to be uplighting. It's very impressive. Richard's telling us we got to go to a quick break. Richard, I want to give one more shout out. If you're listening and it's Friday, Saturday, April 5th, at 4:30, 107 Harbor Way is the great reveal. It's been, as Ted was saying, Ted's had to hold himself back from peeking underneath the veiling because, the great reveal is happening Saturday, April 5th. This is an 8-foot, on plinth, in a beautiful situation, a celebration of, the Santa Barbara's participation and leadership in this deep water diving community all over the world. This is a gift honoring Santa Barbara as the birthplace of deep water diving technology. And come to find out that this has been an active part of Santa Barbara's, commercial history since the 60s on, 80 years plus. Yeah. This is something that's pretty impressive. So thank you both. Thank you, Ted. Thank you, Greg. And when we get back from the break, we're going to talk with a wonderful artist. We talked with him once before, Kevin A. Short. And the reason I wanted to bring him on is because right now he's got a wonderful exhibit on at the Santa Barbara Maritime Museum. And this is another reason to go to the unveiling, because you can stop into the museum and see Kevin's work. We'll talk about why the title is what it is of the show and a little bit about Kevin's process as well. I can't thank Ted enough for coming on and jumping on and being with us and telling us all about, we'll have to talk again, Ted, because it's so interesting what you do and how unique it is and how you started. And it's just a wonderful story. And thank you to Theodore K. Roche IV for coming on. And let's go to a quick break. When we get back from the break, we're going to talk a little about another star of the Maritime Museum. Outside of our deep water, does the diving man have a name, Greg?
No, I don't think we named him.
I wonder if that would be like a marketing thing if we had a community-wide naming.
Well, we do have Jim, who's inside the museum in a gym suit is what we call that. But we'll have to think about this.
Yeah, thank you both. And we'll take a quick break and we'll get back. Kevin was going to talk to us about his work. Don't turn that down. Back in a minute.
Thank you very much.
Horn along the plains of Mexico.
I served on the Charles a fair privateer, but our pay it was weeks overdue. The crew's morale was low and the captain was drunk.
Welcome back. It's Elizabeth Stewart. I'm talking with Greg Gorga, who's director of the Santa Barbara Maritime Museum. And he's brought me his artist right now, his featured artist, Kevin Short. And Kevin has been with us once before. He's born and raised in Santa Barbara. And his bio says that he started painting as a youngster with a toy watercolor set and crayons on butcher paper. And yeah, I remember that. Myself, too. He studied at the University of New Mexico, Pepperdine, and the Art Center College of Design in Pasadena. His connection is with the Pacific Ocean. He sails, he fishes, he surfs, and this influences his work. He is celebrated for the contemporary landscapes of the Pacific Coast, and the paintings celebrate the coastal subcultures. And I remember looking at the show and thinking, oh, he's got a real connection with the surfing community, and finding out that those are his kids.
That's true.
In the painting, yeah. What I like about the work is that you really capture the glistening sea.
Thank you very much. It's important to me. I find
yes.
mesmerizing.
Yeah. So tell me, okay, Greg, first of all, can you tell me your favorite painting in the show?
Mine? Well, there's so many. You know, he brought one to paint when still wet. It was kind of the skyline above LA after the fires. But he has another one called Pandemonium that has a little story to it. I think it's called Pandemonium, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Right. It has a neat story, and I love stories. But, you know, I really can't pick one. He has been painting from the TV Hill and has I have one of these is amazing of the harbor and all the way around the beach, East Beach, West Beach. He has several of those in the display. There's a great one of Cabrillo Boulevard that I really enjoy. And this palm tree painting is just fantastic. I it looks like a Van Gogh to me. And those are just a few of them. And the one of the sheriff on the horse is another great one.
Kevin, so can you reflect on your favorite?
It depends on my mood, actually. It's the upside and the downside of painting when you are in a mood. That, you know, my job is to capture what I see and my emotions about it. It turns out that lots of other people have those same emotions when they look at things. So if I show up and see a particular painting and I'm in the right mood to be touched by it, that's my favorite. I think the one that you can see behind Greg is the one that, there's two of them that have been going back and forth, and it's usually my most recent painting that is my favorite because I'm still looking at it. I'm still surprised I painted it. I haven't gotten used to seeing it, so it still surprises me. It happens at the museum. Last time we were talking with Greg, he described that particular wall in the museum as the wow wall. And I had never heard that phrase before going in and out of the museum and working with him and Emily. And that's exactly what happens, because both times I've made sure, I mean, both times for my shows, I've made sure not to look at the show before it's open. I want to absorb everything that the museum puts together, because they have their own view of what my work does for them. So they arrange it differently than I would. And I walked in this last time, and I don't call it the wow wall. I go, it takes my breath away wall, because I will see a painting that I actually painted and it looks as though it's brand new and I've never seen it before. It's presented that shockingly beautiful. It's so wonderful. So the two paintings that are my favorite right now is the one Pandemonium and one that I believe it's called the Vibrant Smile. And it is of a boy floating in the glare on a surfboard.
Is that the one behind Greg right now?
Yes, it is.
Okay, yeah, that's beautiful. You guys can't see it, but it's beautiful because the sea just glimmers and shimmers. You can see the reflection of the sun, and then, you know, the reflection of the each little ripple of the waves, and the boys, you know, looking out to the ocean. You see them from the back. It's just beautiful. Greg, go ahead.
Well, I'll just say that I give a lot of tours of the exhibit, and I actually did have a woman turn that corner, look at that corner, and say, wow. So it really is. One of the things I do like that term wow wall, because it really is a wow. And
just
Emily's
quickly,
very deliberate about it.
Kevin, how did you decide on the title of the show?
I decided while I was painting up on TV Hill at sunset. It was just dusk, and when I moved away to New Mexico from California, you know, from Santa Barbara, it was somewhat of a psychic shock going from a beach person to suddenly having cows and horses in our backyard. And I missed Santa Barbara. I was homesick for years. And it's what started me to paint. And being above Santa Barbara when it is at its all-time most beautiful from that view just reminded me of it was my dream to come back, because I always viewed Santa Barbara as a very dreamy, romantic town. And that's when I was up there and said to myself, this is the apex of what I was thinking.
Oh, that's wonderful. And Greg, tell us, the show is open from when to when?
So, we're open 7 days a week, 10 to 5. The show is up through May 11th. We have 37 pieces. They are for sale, not all of them, but most of them are for sale. We've sold a ton of them, especially those ones overlooking the harbor and from TV Hill. I bought a second one. So they are amazing. So, yeah, it's up through May 11th.
Thank you both. Thank you very much for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Great to be on again.